WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Alex Kapranos, is the lead singer and guitarist in Franz Ferdinand, a band from Glasgow that caught on in the U.S. with their 2004 single, Take Me Out. It's a platinum-selling band, but before Kapranos was able to make a living playing music, he worked in restaurants, in positions ranging from kitchen assistant to chef. In 2005, the British newspaper The Guardian asked him to write a column about what he ate when he was on the road. His writing is collected in his new book, Soundbites. In an enthusiastic review in the New York Times Book Review, Dave Itzkoff wrote, "Why Kapranos continues to waste his time performing for crowds of ecstatic, devoted, nubile fans when he's already found his true calling is anyone's guess." Before we talk, here's Franz Ferdinand from their first album. That's Franz Ferdinand. Alex Kapranos, welcome to Fresh Air. You actually worked in restaurants before forming Franz Ferdinand, and you write in your book that the greatest preparation you had for touring with a band was working as a chef alongside Bob Hardy in a Glasgow kitchen. Why was that such good preparation?
Well, when you're in a band with your bandmates, you have to deal with living with people in a confined area and being very close to each other in sometimes stressful situations. But sharing a tour bus is nothing compared to sharing the close space of a kitchen where you've got hot fat and knives flying about the place. And, you know, like as everybody knows, like tempers go a bit astray in kitchens sometimes. And we got on really well in that kitchen. And I thought, well, I figured that if we could get on well in the kitchen, we'd get on well in a tour bus. But we got a lot of ideas for the band together in that kitchen as well. We used to sit and we both worked in the sweet corner. We'd make all the desserts. So we'd be left at the end of the night, the two of us in the kitchen, we'd play music and talk about what we would do if we got a band together. So I suppose a lot of our ideas for the band came together there.
So run through some of the jobs you've held in kitchens.
I suppose I've held most of them, really. I started off as a kitchen porter. I was 18 years old and had just dropped out of university and needed some cash. And I went up to Fort William, which is in the Highlands of Scotland, and worked in a kitchen. I got a job as a kitchen porter, scrubbing the pots in this place called McTavish's Kitchen, which is the place where tourists would arrive and would be fed by the coachload. And again, like a lot of chefs start out, I was working happily washing the dishes, and suddenly one day one of the chefs didn't turn up, so I found myself in an oversized set of whites, holding a knife in my hand, like wondering what the hell I was doing as they put me in the kitchen, and suddenly I was a chef, and I enjoyed it, and I went back to university and played in bands and things, and over the years I worked in various different restaurants in different roles, sometimes front of house as well. I worked as a wine waiter for a bit, as a delivery driver as well at one point too. There's a fantastic curry shop in Glasgow called Mother India's Cafe that sells kind of homemade Pakistani food, and that was a wonderful place. And I delivered curries in a in a leaky Fiat Panda, which is a, I don't know if you get them so much in the States. They're very, very small cars that aren't really suitable for the Scottish climate. But yeah, I did that. And yeah, of course, worked as a chef in a few places too.
So what's one of the most adventurous meals you've eaten on the road? Would you describe it for us?
I suppose the most adventurous one was eating the fugu fish in Japan, or it seemed adventurous at the time. Part of the real pleasure of eating is the anticipation that you have, or the mythology that surrounds a bit of food, and the way you get excited about the meal. You look forward to this great event. And we went to this restaurant, and our Japanese host said, we're going to try various different things, and we can try fugu. And fugu is the blowfish, which, if it isn't prepared correctly, is poisonous. And everybody's ears pricked up, and we thought, oh, gosh, what's this? And we said, so how poisonous is this thing? And the host was saying, well, you know, 1 in 100 people are supposed to die when they eat this. And he's like, oh,
that's not very good.
are we going to do this? Are we going to do this? And so half of the band are like, no way, there's no way we're going to try it. Then the other half, the half of the idiots in, which I've got to say is my half, was like, oh, gosh, I've got to try this. It's like Russian roulette with a bit of fish. And so, yeah, we tried it, and although it was probably the most adventurous meal, but it was maybe not the most rewarding meal either, because the fish in itself was very tasty, but it wasn't as exceptional as you'd expect something to be if it's that dangerous. It tasted like a deep fried breaded piece of fish, not unlike a fish finger or something like that, which yeah, all very tasty, but not worth the chance of death.
Yes, we'll rate that one not worth the risk. So what, yeah. what was one of the more rewarding meals you had?
One of the more rewarding meals? Maybe somewhere like Schwartz's Beefsteak in Montreal. It's an old Jewish salt beef place. And that's a marvelous place. It's been there since the 20s. And it's similar to another place in Brooklyn, which I'm very fond of. There's a place in Greenpoint called the Peter Pan Donut Shop, and for me it captures some of the atmosphere of Brooklyn or New York City that I'd maybe romanticized growing up in Scotland. You have an idea of what it's going to be like when you get to the States, and sometimes it's not always met, but when it is met, it's a wonderful feeling. And the Peter Pan Donut Shop, it's, well, when I went there and had my donuts, there was a bunch of cops who'd just come off duty and were eating their donuts and drinking their coffee, and it was like an episode of Hill Street Blues or something from Serpico. And for me, that was wonderful. Yeah, they were donuts. They were good donuts, great donuts, but they were just donuts and coffee. But again, it was something that you could have only found in that place, and they seemed to, every bite seemed to be full of the flavor of the city itself, which is the greatest thing.
Since you've worked in restaurants, and now you eat in a lot of restaurants on the road and write about it too, are there things that used to drive you crazy about restaurant patrons that you try not to emulate now?
Yeah, definitely. One thing is the customer who has such a kind of an overblown ego and so full of their self-importance that they feel that they have to come through to the kitchen to congratulate the chef, you know, like as if the chef gives a damn about this guy. I mean, obviously you're really glad that this person has enjoyed their dinner, and yeah, fantastic, good on you, pal. Like I'm really glad you had a good tea, but you don't need to come through like in the middle of service and stop everything just to let the chef know that it tasted okay. You know, just a quick thanks to the waiter is just fine.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Alex Kapranos, and he's the lead singer of the band Franz Ferdinand, and also co-writes the songs. And now he's written a book of his, it's actually a collection of the food columns that he's written for The Guardian about eating on tour, and it's called Soundbites, Eating on Tour with Franz Ferdinand. Well, you know, we've heard some of your music, and we'll be hearing more soon, but I want our listeners to hear some of your writing. So I've okay. chosen a passage here that isn't exactly about food. It's more about chewing the food and watching your bandmates eat. So yeah. Would you read that paragraph for us?
Sure.
And maybe introduce it for us and tell us why you even thought about including this.
Sure. Well, when I decided to do this writing, it appealed to me because I wouldn't be just writing about the food, but about the people I was eating with and the places that I was eating it with. Because when you're on tour with a band, you feel like you have this amazing experience. You're traveling all across the world, and you're so busy caught up in it, sometimes you don't record it. It's great to keep an archive of where you've been and what you've been doing, some sort of record of what you've done. And in a way, this writing about the food was an excuse for me to, I suppose, keep a diary and keep a record of what had been happening and who I'd been in these places with. And so I suppose this paragraph here, I'm talking about the people I see every day, the other guys I'm in the band with. I eat with these guys every day. Their eating habits are as familiar as the songs we play at night. Paul always covers his plate with a napkin when he's had enough. It's as if he's laying a sheet over a half-eaten corpse. Nick is oblivious to waiters. They stand at his elbow until somebody nudges him to point them out. He then looks startled as if waking from a coma, confused to find himself in a restaurant. Whenever Bob takes a drink, he has to push his upper lip back from his teeth with the rim of the glass. He shakes his fork between bites. Eating also involves triangles in some way, but I've never quite worked out how. Andy tends to stare at his plate, grey with anxiety, worrying about how the foreign stuff will poison him this time. Apparently, I chew too much and frown when I'm enjoying food.
What do you frown when you're enjoying food, do you think?
I don't know. I was talking to the other guys, and I was telling them I was writing this paragraph, and I was saying, you know, like, Nick, you never know there's a waiter there. Like, Bob, you do that funny thing with a glass where you push your lip back. And I said, what do I do when I eat food? Because, you know, if you have these funny habits, you're usually not aware of them yourself. And so, yeah, apparently I frown when I'm enjoying my food. Maybe it's because I'm concentrating so hard on the flavor. I don't know if it's just something that I do.
It is amazing, though, when you eat with people a lot, how you get to see how they chew and how they hold their food. I mean,
It is. And again, this is when you're on tour with a band. You're with these other guys every day of your life, and you do get to know them incredibly well. And I think it's good advice for anybody who's getting a band together. Make sure you do it with people you get on with, because you're going to spend every waking minute with them. If your band does well and you go on tour, then every minute of your life. So if you practice together once a week at the moment and they annoy you then you probably should forget about it now, because when you go on the road, you're going to want to kill each other.
Well, how did Franz Ferdinand get together? This was in 2002 that you actually formed, right?
Yeah, I guess it must have been. Well, Bob and I knew each other, and like I said, I've been working in the kitchen, and for about a year or so, we had, I suppose, an imaginary band. We would sit together from when we were working in the kitchen until after that point. We'd talk about what we would do if we had a band together, and we'd have this idealized vision of what a band would be and things we'd do, and we'd talk about things we'd do, like, yeah, we'd meet the audience's eye when we stood on stage, and we'd want to play something that sounded like pop music but didn't sound like any kind of pop music you'd heard before. And the idea that pop music could be a really, really good thing, and if you were an indie band or an alternative band, you could still play music that sounded like pop music. And so we were thinking about getting something together, and we met Nick at a party. Nick is the other guy who plays guitar and sings in the band. And originally we'd been looking for a drummer, and so went to this party, and parties in Glasgow, you tend to bring some alcohol with you and share it with your friends or whatever. And I arrived there with Bob and Paul and a couple of other people with a liter of vodka, which is traditional Glasgow party drink, and put it down and turned around and it had gone. And there was this guy, then I noticed this guy on the other side of the room with upending the bottle of vodka, pouring it down his throat, and this guy was Nick, and I went over to him, and we ended up having a bit of a fight in this party, and we were about to start laying into each other when, for some reason, I don't know why, I said to him, do you play the drums? And he said, well, he lied. He said he did. He said he played the drums, and I don't know. It was one of those moments, a bit like kids when they're in the playground, when they're about to have a fight, and then suddenly they become best friends. And yeah, it was like that with Nick. We got on really well, talked about music, didn't throw any punches, and met up the next day. I found out that he couldn't play drums to save himself, but he could play guitar, and we could write songs together, and could write quite good songs together. And I suppose that was the beginning of Franz Ferdinand.
My guest is Alex Kapranos, the frontman of the band Franz Ferdinand. His new book about eating on the road is called Soundbites. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Alex Kapranos, the lead singer of the band Franz Ferdinand. In 2005, he started writing a column for The Guardian about what he ate on the road. His food writing is collected in his new book, Soundbites. Let's hear one of your songs, and this is from the second Franz Ferdinand record, and the album is called You Could Have It So Much Better, and this is called Do You Want To. Do you want to say anything about writing it or about coming up with the hook for it?
Yeah, this song, it was written just at the end of 2004. We'd just come off tour, and we went to a party, and I came home from the party a little bit drunk, and was playing my guitar, and came up with the riff and the idea for the chords. Woke up the next morning, or the next afternoon probably, actually, and found these chords that I had, and they sounded quite good. And I thought, what am I gonna sing about? And I just wrote down everything I could remember people shouting in my ear, at the party the night before. And you know how, if you're at a good party, there's usually music playing, and people do that thing where they come right up to your ear and they shout things right in your ear to get over the noise of the music. And when people do that, they seem to let their guard down a little bit. And it's probably something to do with the alcohol too, but they say things that they wouldn't normally say. So I just wrote down all the kind of silly things that people have been shouting in my ear the night before, and a lot of them ended up as the lyrics of the song.
Oh, great. Well, let's hear Do You Want To. And this is the band Franz Ferdinand. Oh, when I woke up tonight, I said, I gotta make somebody love me. I'm gonna make somebody love me. And now I know that it's you. You're lucky, lucky, you're so lucky. That's Franz Ferdinand from their second album, You Could Have It So Much Better. And my guest is Alex Kapranos, who is the band's co-founder and lead singer and co-writes most of the songs. And he also has a new book, and the book is a collection of the food writing that he's done for The Guardian about food he's eaten on the road with the band. And the book is called Soundbites. Now, as our listeners heard from Do You Want To and from Take Me Out, which we opened with, you know, your band has a lot of catchy hooks in the songs. Are you really conscious of that? When you start to write a song, do you think, like, this needs a hook? Because you talked about really wanting the songs to be pop, but different pop. And one of the things that kind of defines pop is that there's a hook.
I love a good hook. I really, really like a hook. And I suppose it comes through in a way a form of rebellion. Like most people, when they get a band together, they're doing it not so much because they're doing what they love, but they're reacting against what they hate as well. And I suppose the background that we came from in a band, we came from a certain art rock background in Glasgow, and a lot of our contemporaries were coming from a background where the idea of melody was anathema. It was the worst thing you could possibly do with your music would be to play a melody. That music had to be completely abstract. And I suppose we were reacting to our contemporaries and saying, No, the best thing you can do with music is have a really direct melody that slices through your head like a knife to the brain. It's a beautiful thing, and it's something that I adore. And for me, the best kind of pop music is the music that has come from the edges. It's come from the outside. For me, that would be bands like Roxy Music or the stuff that David Bowie did, or in later years, it's a band like Nirvana, where it sounds so raw, but at the same time, it's pure pop music. You listen to the hook and it smells like Teen Spirit. It's the greatest pop hook there's been in the last 30 years.
We were talking about how your songs have a lot of hooks in them. And I'm wondering if those hooks ever keep you awake at night while you're writing a song. You know, while you're writing a song and you're going over lines over and over again and you're really kind of like getting deep into the song, is it hard to turn off the hook when you're trying to sleep?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's maybe not so much that you can't turn off the hook. You can't turn off the excitement. You see, when you get a good song together and you play it for the first time with a band and it works for the first time, it's the most thrilling experience. And it's probably better than anything you can get actually on stage itself, when it's just the four of you in a practice room together and you've hit on something and it sounds like nothing you've heard before, and it's exciting, and the blood courses through your veins when you play it. That excitement stays on, and yeah, you don't sleep that night because you're thinking about it.
Alex Kapranos is the lead singer in the band Franz Ferdinand. His book about eating on the road is called Soundbites. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Alex Kapranos, lead singer of the Scottish band Franz Ferdinand, a band known for its catchy hooks. He used to work in restaurants before he made a living playing music. In 2005, he started writing a column for The Guardian about what he ate when he was on the road. His writing is collected in the new book, Soundbites. No, I read that you used to have as a ringtone on your phone the part of the organ solo from Del Shannon's Runaway.
I do. I
still
do.
Have that?
Yeah. I don't anymore. I've got the Minutemen on it at the moment, but I love that song. It's a great hook, and in fact that song's full of great hooks. I love that thing as well. It's a wee instrument called a clavioline, which is the first ever synthesizer. I think that's the first pop song to ever have a synthesizer solo in it. And
I always assumed it was like a farfisa organ.
Yeah, it sounds like that, doesn't it? No, but it was this funny little thing called a clavioline. It was the first monophonic synthesizer. You could only play one note at a time on it, and it's a great sound. And also, I love that idea of having a song that's set up and it has, you know, it's a great little pop song, but it's saving the best bit for the middle of the song. Like, it's a total surprise
right.
When that sound comes in. You can imagine what it was like hearing that song for the first time and then hearing that little section. Like, what on earth is that? What is that sound? That's beautiful. And I love that. I still love that when I hear pop music nowadays and you hear, wow, that's a sound that I've not heard before. And sometimes that can come from, I don't know, like I was listening to Joanna Newsom, I think that's her name, the girl that plays the harp. Somebody was playing with that record the other day and I was thinking, wow, that's something I've never heard before, and that gets you excited. It's at the same time, Timbaland production, that does the same thing for me too. Like that Nelly Furtado single, I thought, oh, that's great. You know, that sounds like nothing I've heard before. And for me, that's the best form of music. That's music that's pop music and avant-garde as well, because it's pushing you. It's pushing you to something that's new.
Now, while we're talking about hooks, and on your song "The Dark of the Matinee," part of the guitar hook on that sounds like a line from Hava Nagila, "Tell Me If I'm Crazy."
Yeah. Somebody else said that to me as well. Yeah, it wasn't a deliberate thing, but yeah, I suppose there is that kind of feel to it. For me, that I thought
sounds like
that,
a power chord version of Hava Nagila.
Yeah, I know that a lot of those melodies. There's a few melodies in Franz Ferdinand that maybe come from the music that I listened to as a kid that my dad used to play me, and my father's Greek and used to play me a lot of Greek music. There's a particular type of Greek music called Rebetiko, which has a lot of the sort of Eastern modes, and it's quite modal music, which is something that Hava Nagila is as well. And it's a lot of those melodies you tend not to find so much in Western pop music or rock music. And when you do hear them, they really stand out. I suppose another example is Mizzaloo, the song that Dick Dale made famous in Pulp Fiction. And that's an old Greek Rambetica song as well. And again, you hear it. It sounds strange, almost alien. There's something a little bit exciting and other about it. It sounds great when you juxtapose that kind of those sort of melodies into the sound of rock music.
Now we have to hear it. So this is Dark of the Matinee, and it's from the first Franz Ferdinand album.
A fringle, slacken ties and I, not to look at you in the shoe, but the eyes, find the eyes, find me and follow me through corridors, refectories and files, you must follow me, this academic factory will find me. The dark of the matinee, it's better in the matinee. The dark of the matinee is mine, yes it's mine.
That's the band Franz Ferdinand, and my guest is Alex Kapranos of the band. He is a co-founder, a lead singer, and co-writes most of the songs. In I think it was 2005, Esquire magazine in its best dressed men in the world issue named you number 9th best dressed man in the in the world. So can you talk a little bit about the look that you wanted Franz Ferdinand to have, and that you yourself wanted to have on stage?
Yeah, that's a funny one, that Esquire thing, because I think in the same issue they also put me, I think, 15th worst dressed man as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, there's a nice sense of balance around about there. That's kind of good. But as for the look, for me, I always liked the idea of the sort of like bands or groups or even gangs, which is what a band is essentially. It's a gang of people who are sort of outside the bounds of normal society. Like, and a gang that dresses sharper than the people around about them. There's two ways of rebelling with the way that you look, and that's to either dress up or to dress down. And dressing down never appealed to me. It was always the sharper bands that I liked. It was always the two-tone movement or the mod movement, or bands like Roxy Music or guys like Bowie or later years a band like Pulp or somebody like Morrissey, who there was a certain sharpness about them that set them apart from the way that other characters looked. Yeah, I always liked that idea, and also in cinema too. Like you'd find figures like Albert Finney in Saturday Night and Sunday Morning, or even De Niro in Mean Streets. There's a sharpness which is way more dangerous than you can get from somebody who's wearing a pair of ripped jeans.
Now that you've been writing food columns for The Guardian, in addition to writing music and lyrics for songs, do you feel like writing lyrics and writing newspaper columns use really different writing muscles?
I suppose I write in a similar way when I do both things, and the best part of the writing process isn't the writing itself, but the editing. And the thing I loved about writing these columns was the fact that they had to be 400 words every week. And it really concentrates your prose when you write like that. Because when I'd start out, I'd usually write 1,000 or 1,500 words and then try and break it down. And it's a wonderful process to go through to take a sentence and make it more concise and realize which words are unnecessary and phrase things differently. And that's for me the best kind of writing, the writing which is, it communicates things, communicates a complex situation simply. And I think that's what the best lyric writing is as well. It's the writing that is concise, like the best poetry, the best prose. It's concise. I hate flowery, excessive language. I like it to be pretty much to the point.
Do you do a lot of editing on your song lyrics?
I do. One of the ways I often write lyrics is to write prose beforehand, and so, you know, like a song like "Dark of the Matinee" we were listening to earlier. That was maybe about sort of 7 or 8 sides of A4 paper, and I went through that looking for ideas, and so that was free prose, and then I'd go through that and take through the ideas at work and rearrange them, and until you have something that fits with the music.
Well, one difference between your column in The Guardian and your lyrics is that the column doesn't have to rhyme.
Well, yeah. Sometimes rhyme can be the enemy of pop lyrics as well. Like the most obvious rhymes are terrible. I think sometimes it's good to write, or certainly to come up with lyric ideas away from the music or at the same time as the music, so you don't go with the most obvious rhyme schemes. And it's awful when you're listening to a pop song and you can almost hear what the next line's going to be in advance because the rhyme scheme is so obvious. It's good to get away from that.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you, Terry. Thank you.
Alex Kapranos is the lead singer of Franz Ferdinand. His book about eating on the road is called Sound Bites.
For pride, Christie ended in my stride. Said I'm strong, now I know that I'm a leader. I love the sound of you walking away, you walking away. Mascara bleeds a blackened tear. Oh, and I am cold, yes, I'm cold. But
this is Fresh Air.